Happy hump day, everybody. Welcome inside our ESPN studios here in Northern Nevada. Happy to be with you on this Wednesday, July 29th. We got some fun stuff to talk about. We'll take a look at Major League Soccer as they get close to starting their quarterfinal round of their MLS Is Back tournament. A very exciting round of 16. Also, an interesting happening after one of the games that I did not know was an available option to a referee. But we'll talk about that when we get there. But very interesting round of 16, so we'll take a look at that and to do a little preview for the quarterfinal round, and which I believe starts tomorrow. And we'll also take a look at Major League Baseball last night, the incident between the Astros and Dodgers. Although it seems to have been a little blown out of proportion, it's still an interesting and intriguing situation that two MLB teams find themselves in the year 2020 with the season that we have and with the regulations and rules that we have. So we'll dive a little bit into that as well. But I wanted to start in the world of the NFL as we, training camp now going on. Players have reported, they're starting their workout, getting ready for just the lead up now to the regular season, because no preseason happening this year. And it appears that we are getting more and more players opting out, which has become an option really in any sport that has chosen to return this year. And the way the NFL is essentially financially helping players that have chosen to opt out, if you are labeled as high risk, you can make $350,000 this year. If you're a player that's not at high risk, you can make $150,000 this year, which, I'm sure anybody or most people in the United States would take either one of those two sums of money. But if you're a professional athlete, not really the year that you're used to or the checks that you're used to, but still it's something for them. And we've seen, more and more players really start to opt out. We've had a few already today that have announced they're going to opt out. Nate Solder, the offensive tackle for the New York Giants, really stands out as one of the guys that have announced today that they will not be playing this season. A lot of these guys cite family issues or just health issues. Nate Solder himself has had bouts with cancer. His son is battling cancer. He also just had a newborn son, he and his wife did. So a lot of reasons for him not to play. And again, we got to respect that. It sucks. And it's going to be a bummer to lose some of these guys from the field and from the season, whatever that may look like this year. But we gotta just respect it and hope that everyone the player and their family stays healthy, and that next year, hopefully next season, when we're hopefully not dealing with the coronavirus, or at least we're not dealing with it at this type of volume, we can see a lot of these guys back out on the field. But Nate Solder, definitely someone that stands out, especially from that offensive line from a team like the Giants, who are trying to get better, hoping that Daniel Jones can improve, hoping that Saquon Barkley can stay healthy and continue to be the weapon that he is. And without him there on that offensive line, that's going to be a big role for those guys to fill. And we'll see if they do it in a division that doesn't really seem to have a runaway. Again, the NFC East put forth the most lackluster division champion last season. And at one point, it was thought that the division champion was going to be crowned with a losing record. And, it really doesn't seem like a division that has a team that really stands out. I think some may lean towards Dallas, some may lean towards Philadelphia, but I think for the most part, it's a pretty up-in-the-air division, and this is going to be a big role for the Giants to fill, trying to compete with Washington, Dallas, and Philadelphia this year. But we'll see how the Giants play it. Some other players that have announced they will not be taking part in this season, a couple wide receivers that stand out. Devin Funchess for Green Bay has opted out of this season, and that's big just because with a Green Bay Packer team that is still, very well put together and can be a competitive team, that wide receiving core stands out like a sore thumb. And Devin Funchess was really kind of the veteran voice of that receiving core. He was somebody that could be a leader, somebody that could really help bridge the gap between Rodgers and those young receivers. And not having him there could really put a strain on that passing game and the way the Packers offense is able to operate. And this could be an interesting season more for kind of on the sideline and off the field interactions for Green Bay. Because you're going to have Aaron Rodgers, obviously a quarterback, very experienced in the NFL, has that championship ring, and has really been doing everything he could to get back to that championship scene. Of course, the Packers in the NFC Championship game last year. And he's walking into a team, again, that is pretty well put together except for that receiving core. So if he is struggling with patience and just, you know, struggling with kind of keeping his cool on that sideline from time to time this season, it could be interesting to see the interaction that he has with Jordan Love. Because that being the surprising question mark that it was coming out of the NFL draft this year with the Packers taking a quarterback in the first round, no less, with Jordan Love, it's going to be interesting just to see what the interaction is like between those two if the passing game doesn't go that well for Green Bay this season. Because you would imagine that the whole thought is that Rodgers is going to start to prepare Jordan Love for his eventual taking of the throne there in Green Bay. And if Rodgers is frustrated and pouting on the sideline or doing something like that because he just doesn't have that kind of solid receiving core and those options and the trust really with those guys, the interaction between him and Love could be very different as well. Either positive different or negative different, it could really go either way. Either Rodgers could really feed into it and really start to teach Jordan Love how to be a team leader and how to pick guys up, or it could go the other way and Aaron Rodgers could just, you know, kind of cut himself off from those guys on the sideline. I don't really see him doing that, but you never know with Rodgers and with that Green Bay team what you're going to get sometimes there. But for the most part, I think it'll still be a decent season for that team. You can never count out Aaron Rodgers. You just can't. It's been proven that you know, even when it comes down to the last throw, that last Hail Mary, he's definitely been one of the quarterbacks to come through. So, but just without Devin Funchess there, it'll be interesting to see what the interaction, the chemistry. No preseason this year. You go from camp into the season, and whether or not you have depth or whether or not you have that chemistry there can really mean the difference between having that momentum and having that rhythm on offense and being able to, you know, pick apart teams maybe a little bit easier in the beginning of the season, or having to, you know, scratch and claw your way from behind, or just struggling with some of these games earlier on, which then, you know, digs a hole for you to get out of as you go out through the season, go on through the season, especially later on, you know, in those last few weeks. So not having Devin Funchess there could really disrupt that rhythm possibly for that Green Bay offense if they can't get that passing game up and running. Another wide receiver that has announced he will not be participating this year is Marquise Goodwin of the Philadelphia Eagles. And while this isn't the same as that Green Bay situation, with with a receiving core not necessarily having the depth, because Philadelphia really went out and put together a team of speed at the wide receiver position, because they had Marquise Goodwin, they had Jalen Reagor, they had John Hightower, Quez Watkins, so they had some good speed there at wide receiver, and missing Marquise Goodwin isn't, you know, like losing a Devin Funchess for Green Bay. It's just one of those weapons that isn't going to be there anymore. But you still have three speedy guys for that Philadelphia offense. And ultimately, this is just kind of a bummer for Philadelphia to lose a weapon that can make them more dynamic. But ultimately, I think they're still in a better position in terms of their wide receiver core than, say, a Green Bay Packers team. So a bummer to see them miss out on that wide receiver, but not putting them in as tough a position as Green Bay. Another wide receiver that is taking the year off, Baltimore's DeAnthony Thomas, which really is a bummer just from thinking about what he could do for that team. You think about the speed that team has there with Lamar Jackson, with Mark Ingram, with, you know, some of the Willie Snead and some of those receivers out there. To have somebody like DeAnthony Thomas, who's just a human torpedo. The guy just goes and goes and has incredible speed. So for him not to be there, I mean, to imagine a Ravens offense that can really execute with, you know, guys like Lamar Jackson back there and Mark Ingram and with a DeAnthony Thomas out wide, I mean, it's a crazy thought, and it could make that team even more dangerous. Now, I mean, they're already going to be dangerous this year, but having a DeAnthony Thomas in the mix like that could have made them a whole different type of team. So, you know, to have to see him take the season off, just a bummer not to be able to see that weapon with Baltimore and see how they'd be able to use him. But we also have some guys on the line that have chosen to take the year off on the defensive line. One of the names that stands out, Michael Pierce of Minnesota. He was the guy tagged with replacing Linval Joseph there at nose tackle, which is already a big ask for someone to come in and have to fill the shoes of Linval Joseph on that Minnesota Vikings defense. But Michael Pierce was the guy tagged with it, and now he has chosen to not play this season. So for a team like Minnesota that, you know, lost Stephon Diggs and is going to try to really count on Cousins and Thielen there in that offense in terms of the passing game, and of course Dalvin Cook, who knows what's going to happen there, but it's a big ask now for your defense. Again, we talked about the Giants having to fill that offensive tackle void that Nate Solder is going to leave. Well, Minnesota now has to do that on their defensive line with a guy in Michael Pierce that, again, was trying to fill already the big shoes of Linval Joseph. So that could be a tough ask for a lot of those Vikings guys to try and pull together and support that defensive line. But I think it's doable. No running game really in the rest of that NFC North really blows me away or you know makes me think that it's not possible for Minnesota to step up and make those adjustments. So it might not be as big of a deal in the long run, but right now looking at that, that's a big miss out there for Minnesota. Somebody else taking the year off, star Lotulelei of Buffalo there, announced that he won't be playing again. Another primary run stopper for a team there in Buffalo. And this is a guy that signed a 5-year deal back in 2018 and has really been a rock for that defense. And now that he's going to be taking the year off again, another role that's going to be filled by committee, I feel like, there in Buffalo. And for a team that seems becoming more and more of the favorite in that AFC East with every passing day as we get into training camp, that could be a big key and a big piece missing for Buffalo this year. But again, same thing kind of like with Minnesota. No run game really in that division between Miami, the Jets, and New England really scare me that much. So with you know, this is a big miss for Buffalo, and again, this could have been somebody that really made a difference on every single play this season for that Bills team, but I still think they have the ability to fill that role by committee and take advantage of that AFC East division this year. And so we'll see if both those teams can do that. Another team that may be filling a defensive line position by committee is the Chicago Bears, as Eddie Goldman has chosen to take this year off. And again, somebody that even the general manager, Ryan Pace, has referred to him as the anchor of that defense. And he signed a 4-year extension with Chicago prior to the 2018 season. So kind of coming to the end of that extension. But nonetheless, has been a huge piece of the puzzle for that Bears defense. And again, in a division where, you know, I mean, in terms of Minnesota, I'm not too worried about anybody else's running game. If Dalvin Cook is back there taking snaps for Minnesota, I'm a little worried if I'm Chicago's running game about trying to stop that beast back there, while you could still have Cousins get into a rhythm with somebody like Thielen and have that team be a little more dynamic. So for Chicago, I think they might be the ones that suffer the most from their defensive tackle not being there. And we'll have to see if they can do a good enough job in filling that role and filling again, that spot on the defensive line that's important for a team that's, you know, counting on improvements from both sides of the ball this year. So we'll see if Chicago can do that. But the other kind of standout players that are I guess it's not so much that they're standout. Well, some of them are. But the fact that New England seems to have a player almost every single day, two or three players every day that say they're not going to play. Because in my notes, there are 6 players as of right now from New England that have opted out of this season. Guys like Patrick Chung, who is a big key at safety there. Dante Hightower at linebacker as well. And then you have a couple guys from the offense there. Brandon Bolden, the running back, has opted out. Marcus Cannon, offensive tackle, has opted out. Danny Vitale at fullback has opted out. So just a few of the guys from New England that will not be playing this season. A team that's already going to be reeling a little bit from, you know, losing their star quarterback there in Tom Brady, and have already going to have to make a lot of adjustments this season and try to pull themselves up to still be competitive there in the AFC East. And I think this is an even bigger. I mean, really, Tom Brady did not have his best year last year. So I think New England already kind of got an idea of what that offense is going to be like. There's going to be some struggle. There's going to be some growing pains. I mean, Cam Newton could come in and find a rhythm sooner than later. But I think the best case scenario would be that he is a slightly above average quarterback this year, just trying to find a rhythm with a Belichick offense and not knowing the kind of weapons he's going to have around him. But to lose guys like Patrick Chung and Dante Hightower from your defense, those are huge, huge losses. I mean, nothing on that team. I mean, the defense really kind of had a standout season, but a better season than the offense did, it felt like, watching the Patriots last year. So to lose two star players like that is going to be just as difficult on the defensive side as trying to find that rhythm on offense. So to see the state of New England right now, already trying to rebound and fix up their offense, now having to try to replace two massive parts and pieces to their defense, this could be a season that Patriots fans haven't felt in quite some time. It could be one of the most frustrating seasons that they've had, really, this century. I mean, my goodness, ever since we turned to the year 2000, it's been pretty good for fans of New England. So we'll have to wait and see how they fill those roles and where they can find some kind of production, because Cam Newton's not going to be able to do it on his own. So if you're missing weapons like this and it's going to be hard, and it's hard to get into rhythm, it could be a year like we have not seen for New England in quite some time. But those are some of the players that are opting out of this season. I'm sure more will follow. But that's kind of where we stand right now with some of the bigger names that will not be playing this season, regardless of what that season may look like. We will just have to wait and see where that all goes. And we'll talk on the show tomorrow as well about the NFL and a possible bubble situation, what they could have done and what they are doing now. But you can understand with the way it's set up why these players may feel so uneasy. But we'll get into that more on tomorrow's show. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, the Astros and the Dodgers met last night, the first time since Houston's trash can banging revelation came to light, and it was an interesting game. We'll talk about that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, the question was, when the Astros and the Dodgers get together this year, would anything happen? Because there was a lot of curious minds wondering how the Astros are going to be treated this year. And they got a little bit of a break, did Houston, when fans weren't going to be allowed at the game, because every single time Houston was on the road, you know they would have just been pelted with chants and boos and who knows what else. But Major League Baseball came down and announced their schedule this season, that East will play East, Central plays Central, West plays West. And in that, we got the Dodgers and the Astros. And what seemed like a game that would have intrigue regardless, I mean, there's still two of the better teams in Major League Baseball. Of course, it gets more intriguing when we come off an offseason that had the revelation of the Houston Astros and their 2017 trash can banging system to win a World Series. And all of that came to light. And of course, it was then, you know, everything was looked back on and how it affected the Dodgers. And it was talked about how the pitcher, Ryu, was pretty much, you know, losing his job because he was, quote unquote, tipping his pitches, as the Astros said. So you can imagine that the Dodgers have been carrying around a lot of pent-up frustration and probably a little bit of pent-up aggression as well towards this team ever since all of that came to light. Well, it seemed as though through the first five and a half innings last night that nothing would really happen. It was a regular baseball game between two teams, and it was, you know, a fairly closely contested game. Dodgers ended up winning 5-2, but it was. It didn't seem as though anything was really going to get out of the ordinary. And then we got to the bottom of the sixth inning, and things got a little heated. Now, we can't be overly surprised by this. When a team gets caught like they did, or not, they didn't necessarily get caught in the act, but they you know, were revealed to have done what they did by a former player, and essentially, we knew that from that point on, it was going to be different. And so when we entered this season with that knowledge being brought to light, we knew that it was going to be different with the Astros this year. And really, nobody else that plays them, you can make an argument for teams in their division being mad at them, but really, nobody else out of those teams in the AL or NL West divisions are going to be more mad at the Astros than the Dodgers. So when we get to the bottom of the sixth inning, and what's kind of interesting about this, it's instigated by a guy that wasn't even involved in either of those two teams back in 2017. Because, you know, Joe Kelly is essentially the guy that starts it with all of this, because he has not been known for his control at the plate. I think he was the guy that had that viral video go out this offseason where he was pitching in his backyard and he had an errant pitch that broke a window. So he wasn't, you know, showing control then. He hasn't been known for control in the past. So a wild pitch here, a wild pitch there, not overly surprising. But again, this is not an ordinary matchup. This is not an ordinary game. This is going to be a game with a little bit of extra tension. So we get to the bottom of the sixth inning, and, you know, Jose Altuve pops out. You know, nothing seems too crazy there. Then Bregman steps up. And, of course, Bregman's been one of those guys that's been front and center throughout this whole thing. And he's up in the count, three balls to none against Kelly. Then that pitch, that final pitch comes, a 96-mile-an-hour fastball, and it goes right over Bregman's head, and tension starts to rise. And, again, Joe Kelly, and I kind of appreciate the gestures to a point, because this is a guy, again, we don't get to see a whole lot of attitude in baseball, right? Those, you know, non-written rules of baseball, you know, you don't flip your bat, you don't kind of do anything outside of the box. So to see Kelly with some of the reactions that he had throughout these few at-bats that kind of sparked this bench-clearing incident was comical in a sense, but also kind of puzzling. Like, why are you so mad at this Astros team right now? Again, you weren't even there for the Dodgers in 2017. Throws this ball at Bregman, goes over his head, and then does some kind of yawning gesture or something like that towards Bregman, and then of course he goes down to first, and then, you know, after that Michael Brantley comes up, and again, just like Joe Kelly, not part of that 2017 World Series, but the at bat, you know, kind of plays out again like a normal at bat. You know, there was a ground ball hit to Max Muncy. Kelly goes over to cover first base, covers it, gets the out, but his leg is kind of covering the front of the first base bag, and it gets clipped as Michael Brantley is making his way to first base. So Joe Kelly, again, takes some exception with that, kind of turns around and looks at Brantley. So then I can't remember if it was Brantley that said this or if it was somebody from the Astros dugout, because, again, there's no fans there. So anything that's being said is pretty much going to be heard by all the players and coaches that are there. So, again, I can't remember if it was Brantley or somebody from the Astros bench, but they essentially screamed at him, "Just get on the mound, little effer." That's essentially what they yelled at Joe Kelly. So he did. I mean, he got back on the mound to face Yuli Gurriel. And again, it seemed as though we had gotten back to a regular baseball game, but Joe Kelly got a little wild again. And it got to a point where a ball kind of, you know, goes close to Yuli Gurriel, and he has to kind of scamper out of the way. Nothing like the pitch to Bregman, but again, balls just coming kind of close to Yuli Gurriel and not seeming like they're totally under control. So Gurriel kind of tosses his bat after the at-bat, makes his way down to first base, and everything seems calm again. But then Carlos Correa steps up. So after all this, after the incident with Bregman and the ball flying over his head and the yawn and the cover of first base, after Michael Brantley goes up and the comments from the Astros dugout, then you have a few wild pitches go to Yuli Gurriel. Now you have Carlos Correa step up, and again, Somebody that was involved with the 2017 Astros and already had a home run off of the Dodger starter of Walker Buehler. He also took a fastball that came very close. Not overly close, but it sailed over his head just like the one earlier in the inning. So this now leads Correa to remove his helmet. And then what's now become a meme, Joe Kelly makes like two or three different like pouty face. I think he sticks his tongue out at one point. Like, I don't know where all this attitude from Joe Kelly came from, but he was showing it last night. So he makes a couple faces, Correa's way. And all of a sudden, John starts, then both benches clear. And obviously no brawl or anything like that broke out between the two teams. In fact, it almost seemed very baseballish. There's a lot of times where benches clear and then just, they both just kind of stand there, guys holding guys back. But a lot of the times, I would say at least 50-50 in terms of when benches clear, whether or not you're actually going to see punches thrown. So benches cleared, and it was a very 2020 benches clearing moment. You had guys sporting masks. Astros coach Dusty Baker, I was out there, as well as Dave Roberts, both trying to kind of, settle people apart, each with their masks on. And you also had, Max Muncy and Jose Altuve face-to-face. You had Altuve wearing a mask and Muncy not wearing a mask. And then what was kind of funny about this whole thing, too, was typically if there were fans there, you knew they would have been going crazy. They would have been just chanting, screaming, cheering, doing all that kind of stuff. Again, there were no fans, but there were cutouts. So you kind of saw in camera angles here and there some cutouts just smiling in the background. I don't know why that made me laugh. I'm not laughing as hard as I was last night when I saw the images of it. But I don't know why that made me laugh so much to see an empty stadium but some cutouts just smiling as guys are being held back and yelling at each other and going face-to-face and all that. But ultimately, nothing really came of this. It was a heated, tense moment there on the baseball field. But ultimately, this is what we're going to expect from Astros games this year. I don't know how the rest of this series with the Dodgers is going to play out, especially tonight coming off that game last night. But nonetheless, we can't be surprised when something like this happens with the Astros. We've talked about it time and time again that, sign stealing happens in baseball and it's part of the game. But when you go to that extent, you have someone watching video, you have them, sending signs, the relays that to the guy with the trash cans banging. When you have that whole system set up and then it comes to light and you have a team like the Dodgers who are so affected by that, and you had several teams that were affected by that, these games against the Astros are just going to feel different. They're going to be different. You're going to have this type of possibility essentially every time they step onto the baseball diamond. And again, a little confused as to why Joe Kelly was so against Houston last night, seeing as how he wasn't there. But you can't blame anybody on these teams that have been, really kind of impacted by the Astros and their trash can banging system. You can't fault any player on there for being a little angry. Maybe Joe Kelly just kind of fed off the anger and frustration from some of those Dodgers players that were there in 2017 and are having to, control those emotions in this series. But for Joe Kelly to be going that hard at it, and honestly, it's come back to bite him, because it has been announced that LA Dodgers reliever Joe Kelly has been suspended eight games, if I didn't say that clearly enough. In announcing, MLB referred to Kelly's past history with intentional throwing, the fastball that buzzed Alex Bregman, and his taunting of Carlos Correa. So essentially, the history of Joe Kelly being a wild guy, again, he has not been known to have good control over his pitches throughout his career, but essentially him being wild in the past, throwing at Bregman, and then taunting Correa, those three things combined are why he is being suspended for eight games. And who knows what that kind of impact is that's going to do to the Dodgers, but ultimately, we can't be surprised if this happens throughout the season with other teams facing the Astros, especially against guys like Bregman and Correa, and even Altuve maybe from time to time as guys that participated in that trash can banging season in 2017. But for the most part, it was, again, No punches thrown. I mean, when I saw the initial alert of benches clearing, I was expecting some real punch. I mean, between the Astros and the Dodgers, I expected some real punches to be thrown. But then watching the video, nothing really out of the ordinary. I mean, the lead up to the benches clearing was more entertaining than the benches actually clearing themselves. So it was a very 2020 coronavirus, you know, scene there with guys being restrained in masks and you know, not going all out against each other or anything like that. But it seemed to be de-escalated very quickly. And you'd have to think that's partially because of Major League Baseball and the way they set up the rules and the punishments with, you know, social distancing and still minding your manners there on the field. But just an interesting situation there for everybody involved when it came to that game last night. We'll see how it continues tonight. I wouldn't be surprised. Although, you know, with the suspension of Joe Kelly, I'm sure both teams maybe be a little more on their better behavior tonight. But again, I wouldn't be surprised if this continues to happen, because the Astros are enemy number one right now, public enemy number one. And, you know, this is the type of season they can expect. But, yeah, we'll see how that second game goes tonight, and we'll see how the Dodgers can continue on without Joe Kelly for the next 8 games. But we are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the MLS is back tournament. They approach their quarterfinal round, also 1868. On their way to playing Portland Timbers 2. So we'll talk about that coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Welcome back inside the studio. Let's talk a little soccer, because Major League Soccer is getting into its quarterfinal round of their MLS is back tournament, and the round of 16 provided some interesting games. It started off with Orlando City and Montreal back on Saturday, and Orlando City did a great job against Montreal. I mean, the Impact kept a very kind of clean sheet in terms of just being tidy. I mean, that's the wrong phrase to use, because clean sheet means obviously they kept them off the board, which they didn't. They allowed Orlando City to have a goal there. So really, they were just very neat and tidy throughout the whole game, not giving Orlando City any kind of easy opportunities, not allowing them to really kind of build up any crazy momentum, but they were able to get that one goal. I mean, their counterattack for Orlando City was great against Montreal. I mean, just being able to get the ball and go and looking for those opportunities when they came, and eventually being able to make the most of it, getting that 1-0 victory over Montreal. And Orlando City now on their way to the quarterfinals. Then also on that day, we had Philadelphia taking on the New England Revolution. And in a game that got relatively chippy towards the end, I mean, it was fairly physical between the two teams. And then I saw something that I don't think I've ever seen in soccer before, whether here in the United States or watching it from Europe as well. A coach got a red card after the match was over. So Bruce Arena, the coach of the New England Revolutions, was extremely displeased with the referee and some of their calls later on in the game, or late kind of down the stretch there in the game. So final whistle goes, and he is just, I mean, screaming, yelling, going off at the referee, and he just shows him a red card. And I was confused about it at first, because I thought, you know, has the referee forgotten he's blown the whistle and ended the match? But that's apparently something that they have the power and the authority to do. So I don't know if there's a grace period where after the match is over, they still have that opportunity. But they showed Bruce Arena the red card, and essentially after the match, that means that he'll most likely get fined, maybe some other punishments as well. But I have not seen that before, you know, watching soccer, whether at a club level in the United States, Europe, or at an international level. Haven't seen that before, so I thought that was interesting. Didn't know that was even a possibility, but there you go. But Philadelphia win that match, go on with a 1-0, go on to the quarterfinals. And on Sunday, New York City FC showed up against Toronto FC, beating them 3-1. Very strong showing there from NYC. And then we had our first penalty kick shootout in the MLS's back tournament there on Sunday when Sporting Kansas City and the Vancouver Whitecaps went into penalties scoreless, and Sporting Kansas City came away with the 3-1 win on penalties, so they find themselves in the quarterfinals as well. And then we had, I mean, if you love scoring, I hope you watched on Monday. If not, what a showing. I mean, San Jose, what can you say about the Earthquakes? They just show up and just work their rear ends off in every single game this tournament. They're an underdog that just keeps performing, and they beat Real Salt Lake 5-2. Just a great performance there from San Jose. It seemed like everything in their offense had a nice ebb and flow to it, and Real Salt Lake really had no option and no answer for San Jose, the way they were moving the ball and had their attack rolling there. And then LAFC steps up against Seattle Sounders, and they take out the defending champs 4-1 as LAFC really kind of tapped into that plan B. And Bob Bradley, you know, he's had his doubters in the past, but he's done a lot of great things with that LAFC team since taking over there. And a team that does not have their star player in Carlos Vela out there. They've done a great job of keeping their head above water. Now here they are in the quarterfinals and really looked like a very well-tuned machine there in that game against Seattle Sounders. So LAFC off to the quarterfinal round. Then yesterday we had both games go to penalties. Columbus Crew and Minnesota went to penalties at 1-1, and Minnesota United buried all five penalty kicks to beat Columbus 5-3. And then Portland and FC Cincinnati also went to penalties, tied at 1, and the Portland Timbers came away with a 4-2 win on penalties in that game as well. So that sets up the quarterfinal matchups. That should be very entertaining. Again, we have the Philadelphia Union going up against Sporting Kansas City. And again, Philadelphia not only survived kind of that chippy game there with New England coming down the stretch, but they also controlled the pace for really the first time in this tournament, did Philadelphia in that round of 16 games. So we'll see if they can continue to do that. And they've been getting by a lot of these games by the skin of their teeth, having three single-goal margin victories, including that game in the round of 16. So it's a Philadelphia Union team that knows how to play scrappy and play in a game where they're either tied or they have a one-goal lead. And it's a nerve-wracking lead to try and defend, and Philadelphia has done it. So we'll see if they can continue that against a Sporting Kansas City team that has 6 goals in 4 matches there in Orlando. And, They have power in that attack, but you got to wonder when. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's kind of that power that can really sustain itself throughout this tournament. So we'll have to see whether or not they can really pull themselves up, because that game against Vancouver, they had some chances that they could not take advantage of. And as you get deeper and deeper into these knockout stage of the tournament, you have to be able to capitalize on those opportunities when you get them. So if Sporting Kansas City can't do that, Philadelphia has shown that they can capitalize on opportunities, and that may be the difference there between the Union and Sporting Kansas City. Then a game that I am very intrigued in, Orlando City SC taking on LAFC. Of course, Orlando also having a very narrow 1-0 win there against Montreal. Again, a Montreal side that was very organized, but talked about that counterattack from Orlando City. And again, that could be another weapon against LAFC in this game. So, you know, anything on paper is just that, on paper, when you look at kind of the options for counterattack for Orlando City. But if they can continue to tap into that, into that arsenal and into, the opportunities that they were able to create against Montreal there in the round of 16, they could very easily do that to LAFC as well. But like I said, Bob Bradley, who has had his doubters in the past, has shown that he has a very solid plan B. Not having Carlos Vela there, this is a team that's stepped up. I mean, Diego Rossi is having a fantastic tournament for this team right now. So, again, two teams that can can strike very quickly. It'll be interesting to see if it's a back and forth game and scoring, or just a back and forth game, but you know, in terms of opportunities, and just see which team can capitalize on that one extra opportunity throughout the game. But again, I think it's an intriguing matchup there between those two. But I do think LAFC would have the slight edge between those two. Then San Jose Earthquakes and Minnesota United FC. San Jose has, just outpossessed pretty much all their opponents in this MLS Backers tournament so far. And they've outscored them 11-5 in the process. What a showing from San Jose. And, of course, Chris Wondolowski at the forefront of that. I mean, he's just been such a key to that team for so long. So to see him having the kind of presence and the kind of effect on that team that he's having right now is fantastic. And I hope he's able to keep it up. It'd be great to see San Jose continue to make a run through this MLS's back tournament. Not going to be easy, though, against Minnesota, a team that takes every opportunity and you know, really does a great job of just being able to capitalize when they can. And Minnesota United has done a great job since coming into Major League Soccer of really just making an impact. And if they beat San Jose, they just continue to do that. And, they really feel – I feel like this is a team that's set up to – really both of these teams are set up to have a breakthrough performance here in the quarterfinals, and that could be the last confidence boost needed to really carry them through the rest of this tournament. But I think for a team that – knocked down all five penalties in that shootout, they have a lot of confidence in themselves and in close games if it comes down to the wire. I think San Jose does too. So I think this is, again, a really intriguing matchup between two kind of really an unpredictable team in the tournament and one of the more predictable teams in the tournament. But nonetheless, it should be a very intriguing game between these two, with San Jose being, I think, a little more of the unpredictable side and Minnesota being a little more predictable. So we'll see if you know, which one of those really comes out on top. But again, a very intriguing quarterfinal matchup there. And the final quarterfinal matchup, we have New York City FC going up against the Portland Timbers. And New York FC, I mean, I don't – something happened to them between the group stage and that first round of 16 game because they looked like a bit of a different team, especially with possession and just being able to, pick up their play when they need to be. You know, they kind of got off to a slower start, I feel like, in that first round of 16 game, but able to, you know, get a win when they need it in a tight, close game. And, now they're on to play the Portland Timbers team, which, you know, found a fair amount of opportunities against a very strong Cincinnati side. So, again, this could be a Portland team that, coming off a penalty shootout, has confidence in themselves when this game comes down to the wire. And I think this one will. And it's going to be a tight contest between these two. I think New York City FC on offense is going to be – I think both teams on offense is going to have a fair amount of chances in this game. Nobody's defense really blows me away between these two, but I think it's again going to be a close game that could really come down to counterattacks, which I think may favor NYCFC. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But I think all four of these quarterfinal matchups are going to be extremely entertaining, and can't wait to see how they play out. And it does start, I believe, tomorrow. Yes, July 30th. So tomorrow at 5:00, the Philadelphia Union and Sporting Kansas City will play their quarterfinal game. Then a game on Friday, two games on Saturday as we set up the semifinals. Also wanted to remind everybody, the Reno 1868 FC are back in action tonight. After having their last two matches postponed, the boys in blue are back in action tonight against the Portland Timbers 2. And, both teams that are trailing a little bit behind Tacoma and Sacramento in terms of games played. Reno and Portland are two games back from Tacoma and Sacramento in terms of games played. So still some wiggle room there for Reno. But this is a big game for them, getting back out there and having the unfortunate opener that they did against Sacramento, giving up that late penalty kick. But this is still a team with a lot of promise, and hopefully they can get back out there against Portland and get a big win tonight. And you can catch that game right here on ESPN Radio, kickoff starting at 7:30. So be sure to tune in there. Tune in right here on ESPN Radio. I believe starting at 6 o'clock, though, you can tune in here to ESPN Radio and hear the broadcast for 1868 and the Portland Timbers 2 tonight. So be sure to do that. Hang out with Zach Beirutti for the call. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up this Wednesday show here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
As we wrap up this hump day here on July 29th, let's take a look at a few things that happened on this day. If anybody out there is familiar with the 30 for 30 film Small Potatoes, What Killed the USFL, then you'll appreciate this one. But on this day in 1986, a New York jury rules that the NFL violated antitrust laws and awards the USFL $1 in damages. I just thought that was always fairly entertaining. In 1990, Boston Red Sox set major league record with 12 doubles in a game. And finally, in 1991, the first Sunday night game at Shea Stadium occurs as the Mets beat the Cubs 6-0. Those are some events that happened on this day in sports history. Again, don't forget, Reno 1868, play Portland Timbers 2 tonight. You can hear that right here on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM, starting at 6 o'clock. I'll be back on the air tomorrow at 2 o'clock, so I'll talk to you guys then. Enjoy the baseball, enjoy the soccer, enjoy all the sports that are coming back. And remember, stay safe out there, wash your hands, wear your mask. Help each other out and watch each other's backs out there. But I'll talk to you guys tomorrow with 2. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. Peace.